This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 25th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York, just 1 week away from opening day. 1 week from today, I'll be in Washington. Get ready for that first game on ESPN. Jacob DeGrom of the Mets pitching against Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals. Francisco Lindor's first game of the Mets. Really fired up about that. Really fired up about, Taylor, a new storytelling feature we're going to be doing on the podcast. We haven't completely locked this down, but we're aiming for tomorrow.
Yeah, we're trying to do something a little bit different, something, you know, in the vein of an NPR sort of feature, kind of expanding on the storytelling that we got rolling during the pandemic last year. Maybe a little bit tighter, but I think you guys are going to like it. I know you're high on it, Buster.
I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to lend insight into personalities that you guys see on the field every day. Let's get some news and notes before we talk to Aldin Gonzalez today. Lance McCullers Jr., the Houston Astros, agreed to a multi-year deal, $85 million, that according to Jeff Passan. There's a wide range of opinion around baseball about this contract and whether or not Lance McCullers Jr. made the right decision in signing with the Astros now versus becoming a free agent. And we'll be talking about that with Aldin. We talked a little bit about this yesterday already. Major League Baseball is taking steps to crack down on the doctoring of baseballs. They're going to also, besides using spin rate analysis, they're going to be using third-party lab inspections of baseballs taken out of play and increased monitors by compliance officers. My question still stands, are they really going to enforce it? Because after my calls yesterday, I felt like this was a parent going, we're really, really, really coming down on you. The San Diego Padres received very encouraging news on ailing Fernando Tatis Jr., of course, was pulled out of the game the other day with left shoulder discomfort. Here was Jace Tingler, the manager of the Padres, giving an update.
Doing well. He was in the training room and feeling really good today. In fact, he was lobbying to get in the lineup today. So, you know, I thought that was, you know, very encouraging. And, you know, he's going to have a good work day today, and we'll kind of see, you know, where it goes. But I think everybody's kind of expected him to be back in the lineup here in the next day or two. So very encouraging news and reporting feeling really good today.
Eloy Jimenez, the Chicago White Sox, hurt his shoulder in a leaping catch attempt, trying to catch and take a home run away. He hurt his left shoulder. He is a right-handed thrower, and there are going to be questions, A, about how he's going to do physically and whether or not it might be better in the end for the White Sox to use a more designated hitter. So we'll see about that. Texas Rangers DH Chris Davis will miss the start of the Major League Baseball season because of a quadriceps strain, according to general manager Chris Young. Davis is a grade 2 quad strain and will be out 3 to 4 weeks. Let's get to the good stuff. How about Jose Iglesias yesterday?
The next pitch, that's a little bouncing ball that's hit out near the shortstop, and the throw over there. Oh my goodness, what a play by Iglesias. How he ever made that play, that's unbelievable right there. It was crazy enough that he got to it, and he was lying down, and he got off a tremendous throw to first base and got Gallagher.
Jerry Smith with that call. That was a play that if it happened during the regular season, that would be a candidate for Web Gem of the Year. Mike Yastrzemski went deep yesterday.
He does, and he hits a high drive to right. It is out of here. He was sitting on it.
Got the call from Dwayne Kuiper, who would agree with me. Mike Yastrzemski is a Jersey and not a Holstein. And also, I don't know if you noticed, Taylor, but Mr. Yastrzemski went to Vanderbilt.
Oh, did he? I did not know that, Buster. Thanks for informing the listening public. I'm sure they didn't know either. So the more you know.
Yeah, very excited. He used to be with the Orioles, but they gave him away. Carlos Correa, there's a lot of talk about whether or not he's going to sign a multi-year deal like Lance McCullers. And at this point, no deal, but he's priming up for the season.
Tomorrow, 0-1, and that's hammered deep to left center field. Going back on it, Stevenson and Tomas, and they will watch that one go. Carlos Correa goes deep, and the Astros lead is 11-8. Correa's third run batted in of the night.
That from Robert Ford with that call. Now, before we get to Alden Gonzalez, to Sarah Langs, Sophia Minert with a preview of the Milwaukee Brewers, and Mookie Betts. We've been talking about UFC 260 all week. It's coming up on March 27th and is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99 at ESPNPlus.com/PPV. And I know you've been hearing from listeners, Taylor, about this read.
Yeah, you know, my pronunciation on most things is subpar, and hashtag keep Stanford wrestling at RatMat 103 wrote in and said, okay, it's bugging me even more that you got a correction and the UFC names are still coming out wrong. So he corrects us again. He says it is Stipe and Ngannou, and Stipe Miocic played baseball at Cleveland State. So a fun fact there for this UFC fight on Saturday night.
Yeah, don't miss that fight. UFC 260 available exclusively for ESPN subscribers.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Alden Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN. And Alden, I know just before we got started, I heard you and you're in a car. And I wondered about this in terms of how you handle it with your kids. Because, you know, my two kids, when they were little, my little girl, Sydney, who's not little anymore, she's 21. I could tell her at age two or three, Sydney, Dad's going to be talking to other people on the phone, and I need you to be quiet like a mouse for the next 3 or 4 minutes. And she absolutely would do that. She was absolutely perfect. And she took it as a challenge that she could stay quiet. And on the flip side, my son, he didn't care. Like he interrupted so many interviews through the years, barreling into my home office, you know, barreling into the room where I was trying to barricade myself because he had a question to ask me. What about your two kids?
Yeah, Buster, you're at least 50% better a parent than me because neither of my two kids would listen to anything I say regarding staying quiet while I'm on the phone. So basically, last year during lockdown here in California, I would never drive anywhere and I was home with my wife and my two kids. And any time that I had to do any sort of work-related call or interview, I just come outside, turn on the car, and speak on the phone. And that is basically how I spent my gas. My gas money went to just doing work in my car. It was like my little mobile office. I weirdly grew comfortable with it. So that's where I'm recording the podcast today.
Very nice. Yeah, I can't believe as Jake was getting older, he's 16 now, and he wouldn't do this now, but I can't believe he didn't create a viral moment on SportsCenter at some point, just barreling into my office like, Sydney did this to me, or Dad, where's my lunch, or whatever. He just didn't care when he was growing up. All right, a lot of people around baseball care about Lance McCullers' contract. Signs it, $85 million. And it was very interesting yesterday to talk to a lot of folks around the game about what they thought about the deal. There were a lot of agents who feel like that McCullers sold himself short, that if he had waited for free agency after having a strong 2021, he could have gotten paid a ton, especially because he just recently had Tommy John surgery. Generally speaking, as you know, there's a perception that you have like a 7-year warranty when you have Tommy John surgery. And that, you know, moving forward, he'd be a good gamble for teams to bet on coming off a strong year. But then I also talked with people who noted that if you're Lance McCullers and you've had Tommy John surgery, you basically have never thrown more than 125 innings in any regular season in your career, and someone offers you $85 million, of course you're going to take it. I didn't hear anybody, you know, saying that, that Lance made a bad decision. They just wondered if he could have gotten more. Which way would you have gone if you were in Lance's shoes?
You know, Buster, I tend to lean on the side that maybe Lance sold himself short while understanding why you take that deal for the reasons that you noted. And I say that because we don't see this often. We don't see a pitcher of that age. I think he's 27 years old, approaching his pre-agent year. Like you said, bounced back really well from Tommy John surgery. What we tend to see in that situation is the pitcher will bet on himself, particularly a Scott Boras client. As you know, he's got the famous reputation for wanting players to go into free agency, especially when they're so close to attaining that. I would have, I mean, and all you got to look at is the fact that Lance McCullers was not really looked at as an extension candidate much. I mean, at least I didn't hear much buzz around Lance McCullers potentially signing an extension, at least not as much as other guys. I thought he'd go into this season, bet on himself, then go into the free agent market where he would have signed for a lot more money. But I think you're right. I think Tommy John surgery probably played a factor. And there is some risk involved from the Astros perspective. I mean, this is a guy who has shown to be a top of the rotation starter, but hasn't provided sort of the workload, hasn't provided the innings workload that you would hope for somebody with this contract. So $17 million a year, I think it's a nice deal for the Astros, considering Zach Greinke's aging, Justin Verlander recovering from Tommy John surgery. They have some nice young starting pitching coming up, and they're probably looking at Lance as a long-term sort of rotation anchor for them. I like it for them, and I agree with you, Buster. I was surprised that Lance didn't just navigate through this season and see where he was coming off of that.
There was a report MLB Network yesterday that Carlos Correa turned down a $120 million offer from the Astros. They obviously trying to lock up some of their possible free agents before this season gets going. $120 million for a player who is going to be really young, and when he hits free agency, he's a shortstop. He's also had a long history of injuries. I'm surprised that the Astros offer was only $120 million, because when you look at it, in the context of what we just saw in a depressed free agent market, George Springer, who's like 5 years older than Carlos Correa, got $150 million from the Toronto Blue Jays, and he's a shortstop. Correa, as I mentioned, he's got back issues. I'm surprised that they didn't offer him more. And I do wonder, you know, Correa is potentially in the same free agent class as Francisco Lindor, who, you know, maybe in the next 10 days, we're going to hear about a $300 million plus deal for him. If that might be at play here, like if Carlos Correa is like, you know what, I want to see what Lindor gets before I make my decision. What do you think?
Yeah, Buster, I saw that number, and weirdly, I was thinking, oh no, is this going to be one of those situations where a player gets insulted by offer from team that he thought valued him more and had been loyal to? It was that low to me at first blush just for a player like Carlos Correa. I do wonder, though, and I know you wondered the same thing, just with the amount of talent that's going to be in the shortstop market next year, how much of an emphasis is that going to be for guys take extensions that maybe otherwise they wouldn't have? Because the last thing you want is to be one of the top players at your position, but then you're also competing with a Francisco Lindor, with a Trevor Story, with a Corey Seager for a contract. And it's interesting to me that neither of those guys from that proclaimed shortstop market, Javier Baez included, have signed or even seem to have been close to an extension just yet. And we're a week away today from opening day. From the beginning of this, when spring training began, I thought that list would be whittled down to at most two or three more guys, because I just don't think that players want to go in the market with that much competition at their position. I'm pretty confident Trevor Story is going to go in the free agent market. I'm fairly confident that Corey Seager is going to go in the free agent market. I thought we'd see more movement from the other three. And that number that you mentioned with Correa, at least from my initial thoughts, I didn't think that would be close to getting it done.
No. Correa missed 53 games in 2017, 52 games in 2018, 87 games in 2019. Last year in the 60-game regular season, he played 58 games. And it's obviously going to be absolutely huge for him this year, given that history of back issues, to stay on the field and to show teams that he's healthy and can be productive moving forward. All right. We talked yesterday on the podcast about the story that Joel Sherman was the first to report. Major League Baseball is going to attempt to crack down on the use of foreign substances. And I say attempt because it feels like that there's a lot of preparation, but my question still stands about enforcement. What did you learn yesterday?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question about enforcement. I heard what you had to say about it, and you're absolutely right about that. What I heard is that, because my initial reaction was that I thought they would do more to guard against this issue, because MLB does feel like this is a serious issue that's sort of slipping away from their grasp here, because as pitchers attempt to increasingly throw harder, the need to grip the baseball becomes even more heightened than ever. The need to have even stickier substances than before becomes even more important. And you consider just the infatuation throughout the league with spin rates and whiff rates, and just it's been getting out of control in terms of teams coming up with their own substances, pitchers using incredibly sticky substances that they hadn't used in the past. And so I thought there would be more to guard against it. And what I learned was that this year, what MLB is trying to do is it's sort of like a two-pronged thing. They're trying to identify the really egregious offenders, which we've seen in the past, but they're also in fact-gathering mode here. I think the biggest thing to come out of this is that they're going to outsource some baseballs to a laboratory to sort of figure out what are the substances that are most prevalent throughout the game. But I also found out what the ultimate goal here is. And we heard that MLB was previously experimenting with tackier baseballs, similar to what you'd see in South Korea and Japan. That didn't work out. The players didn't really take to it well enough. So what they'd like to do, and I know this has been mentioned before, but they'd like to do something to replace the traditional mud that had been used to rub up baseballs for about 8 decades. And they'd like to come up with their own substance that's maybe a little bit stickier, because the mud that they use to rub up these baseballs, I've heard this from players for the last few months, especially when it gets rubbed up and then it doesn't get used for a couple of days, that ball becomes really chalky. And so a lot of players, and some might say it's an excuse, some might not, they say that they have to use foreign substances. They have to use the sunblock or the pine tar and rosin to grip these baseballs, because, and the term that I continue to hear was, they come out of the bullpen or they go into games to start warming up with these balls and it feels like a pool cue. It's really hard for them to grip. And so MLB's ultimate goal is to come up with a substance that's stickier than the mud that they had been using before, so that they could eventually, this is just what I'm told, they could eventually apply the rule as it's stated, which, as you know, as well as anybody, Buster, they never have. And so they could actually police this thing. Right now, I'm told that guys who still use it to get a grip and are subtle about it, they're probably going to get away with it the same way they have before. They want to identify the more egregious guys, and they just want to learn more about what's going on.
Yeah, there are a couple, as you mentioned that, I thought about this. Let's just say, for example, that Alan Gonzalez, power-armed right-hander for the Los Angeles Dodgers, was suspected of using pine tar, and a baseball was taken to a laboratory, and they determined that, yes, there's pine tar on a baseball, and we're going to suspend Alan for 10 days. Can you imagine the arbitration hearing when you're talking about chain of custody? So wait, this is what happened with the baseball. It was thrown. The catcher handled it. After the umpire threw it out to the pitcher, it flew out to the outfielder. It hit his glove, was thrown back into the bat boy, who runs out the pine tar rag every half inning. It was collected over here. And we're going to convict Alden Gonzalez on that? That's laughable, okay? The other thing, too, is, and I've been trying to think of the best way to describe this, it's almost like Major League Baseball Has been standing and watching as speeders go by a highway at 115 miles per hour. And so when they said yesterday, we're going to use spin rates, it's almost like, police coming, hey, check out this radar. It is very specific. It's not 115. It's 115.9. We already know they're speeding. You and I can watch a ball game and pick out 10 guys who are using this stuff. And we have, it comes down to whether or not they have the impetus, the guts, whatever you want to call it, to actually enforce. And if they rely on the managers to challenge other teams, the other team's pitchers, it's never going to happen because there's longstanding gentlemen's agreement between teams not to challenge other pitchers. And what I heard yesterday was that while, they are going to tell the umpires that if they police foreign substances, they have their backs, but they're not necessarily making it a priority. In other words, they're not telling the umpires, guys, we got to crack down here. We're going to get rid of foreign substances. Unless they do that, this is all eyewash to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I agree. And that's why I feel like ultimately in terms of the policing in game, not much is going to change this year. And you're absolutely right about the fact that they just sort of let this sort of go for a few years. And I think it's gotten to a point, and this is some of the feedback that the league has heard from pitchers, is that pitchers have expressed to them that they have this sort of awful dilemma with their careers where they either use the substances that are being used throughout the game or that teams are offering to pitchers to just sort of stay current with what's going on, or they could abide by the rules or use just the regular stuff that they've been using before and fall behind. And it's not as dramatic. I don't want to compare the two, but it did feel sort of like the dilemma that players face when performance enhancing drugs ran prevalent throughout the game. And it's not the same thing. I'm not trying to compare the two, but it's a similar sort of thought process. And I think that's why the league's trying to corral it as best as it can. But I agree with you that it's not going to do a whole lot. And it's like what they did last year, where they sent out that memo that club employees were not allowed to distribute or procure any of those foreign substances for pitchers. They couldn't have anything in their bullpen bags. And they feel like that deterred some guys. And they're hoping that this sort of deters just maybe another small segment of the group before they come up with the long-term solution. But they've been working on that long-term solution for the last couple of years, and they just haven't gotten there yet.
No. And we started talking about our kids, and we'll finish talking about our kids. It really does remind me of like parents going, no, we're telling you, you're going to be really, really, really in trouble if you don't stop doing this. Right. I mean, at some point they do have to come down with a hammer if they're actually going to have the pitchers take them seriously. We saw that in the postseason. We don't need more evidence that stuff is being used because we can all see it watching the games on national television. Major League Baseball officials can see it. If they want to crack down on it, tell the umpires to go check the pitchers. And if they're not going to do that, I don't think anybody's going to take it seriously. Alden, thanks for doing this.
Gotcha, thank you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, a lot of conversation around baseball last night after word of Lance McCullers' contract broke. As I was talking about with Alden, there were really two camps. One was saying he should have bet on himself. He should have gone to free agency. potentially after a strong 2021, he could have gotten a lot more money. And then folks on the other side saying, yeah, if you look at his injury history, how few innings relative to a lot of his peers he's thrown, this is someone who decided, you know what, I'm going to take the bird in the hand versus two in the bush. Which way would you have fallen if you were Lance McCullers and you could throw that curveball the way he does?
Well, first of all, that would be incredible to be able to throw a curveball like that. But I don't know if I'm too negative or whatever else, but I sort of fall into that second camp. You know, you just look at what he's done. And as you were saying, the quantity just really isn't there. And we've seen injuries and everything else that he's dealt with. And he was good last year. You know, he had a 3.93 ERA in his 11 starts. Pip says maybe he should have been a little better, but he wasn't in that like Jacob deGrom or whoever else category of these two ERAs that we saw in the short season. So I think given what he's done, this was a really good move. I understand that we always want to see players bet on themselves, and I love to see that. Yasmani Grandal is my favorite example lately, you know, with what he did with the one-year deal. But I think with a pitcher with this injury history, this was the right way to go.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is four. So the Phillies announced the other day that Aaron Nola is going to be their opening day starter. Not a surprise. Zach Wheeler is good, but Aaron Nola is that team's ace. So he's going to be the first Phillies pitcher to start four straight opening days since Steve Carlton started 10 from 1977 to 86. And if you look in Phillies history in the modern era, so that's since 1900, guys to start at least four straight opening days for them, you've Carlton, Chris Short, Robin Roberts, and Pete Alexander. So some pretty cool names that Aaron Nola now finds himself with.
Number two.
Number two is 10. So another opening day starter we got in the last few days is Max Scherzer, another that is not a surprise, but now is official thanks to David Martinez. So Scherzer has three 10-strikeout opening day games, and that's actually tied for the second most in Major League history. So second most 10 strikeout games on opening day. And he'll have a chance to tie the record, which is Randy Johnson, on April 1st when he starts on opening day for the Nationals against the Mets. The other guys with three 10 strikeout games on opening day are Pedro Martinez, Felix Hernandez, and Bob Gibson. And the crazy thing with Scherzer is that his 10 strikeout games have been in the last three opening day starts he's made. No one else has had three straight years with a 10 strikeout game on opening day.
Number one.
Number one is 2.46. So that's what Ian Anderson's expected ERA was last season. That's based on quality of contact. That's all you need to know. So it's telling us that the low number he had with an ERA, I believe it was in the ones, is kind of backed up by the numbers and backed up by the contact that he made. So, or that he allowed, excuse me. So only six pitchers last year faced at least 100 batters and had a lower expected ERA than that. It's not as low as his 1.95 actual ERA, but that expected number is based on something. So, you know, I had to pick a very dark horse Cy Young candidate on MLB.com the other day, and there were a lot of qualifiers, and I did not have the first pick in the National League, but I went with Ian Anderson, and I think he did something last year that he's going to back up even more this season. And of course, there's two other potential Cy Young candidates on his team in Max Fried and Mike Soroka, but I think that it's worth giving him his due because he's looked really good in spring training so far.
Yeah, and boy, does he have presence. When you talk about mound presence and just looking like he is absolutely comfortable, he has checked every box in regards to that. Real quick, let's go rapid fire through your major award winners. First off, who are your MVP picks?
So I have Juan Soto and I have Mike Trout, and I know that's kind of chalky, but I mean, I talked about Juan Soto a lot this offseason. We've talked about him a bunch, even just in these last few weeks, and it's down to him and Acuna in my head, but I went with him. And Mike Trout, I think I said the exact same thing to you last year. As long as Mike Trout is active and still Mike Trout, I'm picking him.
Cy Young Awards.
I got our New Yorkers. I got Jacob deGrom and Gerrit Cole. You know, Gerrit Cole, I think we've all been waiting for that season. His amazing season. His teammate, Justin Verlander, won the Cy Young. So expecting that out of him this year.
Yeah, your NCAA pick. I don't know what it is, but I guarantee you it's Gonzaga.
Oh, yeah, it's Gonzaga.
Yeah, the way you're going with these picks. Okay, Rookie of the Year, which is a little different.
Yeah, so I've got Ke'Bryan Hayes in the National League.
Chalky.
Heard about him. I know, but he's, I mean, come on. All right. Ian Anderson would be a fun dark horse, by the way. A lot of people, a lot of Braves fans on Twitter in on that. And I have Jared Kelnick in the American League. I think that the chalk there is Randy Rosarena, but I went different, at least there.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick as well. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Buster.
Earlier this spring, Mookie Betts went rapid fire with ESPN.
We'll start with, what was the biggest thing you learned from the pandemic playing through it in 2020?
I'd say the biggest thing was you have to be like mentally tough. I mean, obviously you can make a lot of excuses with all the testing and all the protocols that we had to go through. But, you know, this team is mentally tough. You know, I really, really showed a lot and really just kind of separated, you know, us from the pack, and we had to find a way to do it again.
Right. What new hobbies have you developed during the pandemic / quarantine?
I don't think I picked up any new hobbies. I just think I really worked on the ones that I already had, bowling in particular. I think I really got a lot better at bowling during this pandemic, and hopefully I can win a couple tournaments this coming up season, all season.
What does a lot better mean, Mookie? What did your average score go from two?
I mean, I think it would, I don't know that my average got much higher. I just think I got more consistent when it comes to bowling with the professionals. This year, I was able to, I cashed in a couple tournaments. I made a top 10 in a couple tournaments, in a tournament or two, I think two tournaments actually. So, you know, that just lets me know that I did get better.
Right. Okay. What was your reaction to the Trevor Bauer signing?
I didn't really, I don't know that I had one. I was, other than like good for us, you know, it's a good signing, obviously. You know, anytime you can pick up a Cy Young winner like that, is huge. But I think the more important thing is just a competitor. You know, we know he's going to go out and pitch every fifth day. He's going to get out on the mound, compete, no excuses. You know, he'll be ready to go. And so, you know, that's much needed on any staff.
What are your thoughts on the rivalry now between the Padres and the Dodgers?
You know, coming from the Sox, you know, that Sox-Yankees rivalry, I don't know that there's one in any sports that's better. You know, so being in that, I know that it's going to be fun. You know, both teams are pretty young. Both teams have some guys that are going to be playing against each other for a long time. And, yeah, like I said, I think it'll be fun. I know it's a big rivalry, but, you know, there's also some friends of mine over there. So I know it'll be fun to compete against them.
Right. No team, Mookie, has repeated in 20 years. Is that discussion ever had in the Dodgers clubhouse this year?
Not yet. I think that's kind of the elephant in the room. I know it's pretty obvious. Maybe we speak on it, maybe not. But I think the most important part is just to continue to stay hungry. Know that, you know, once you make it to the top, it's hard to stay up there. Everybody's shooting at you. You know, you just have to find a way to stay. And, you know, I don't know that there's a magic formula other than just going and playing ball.
What about the 2021 Dodgers makes you think you can repeat? In other words, what do you see from your Dodger team now?
I think I still see intensity, the same intensity that we had last year. Everybody's ready to go. Obviously, having DP and Bauer back, that definitely helps. A couple other signings I can't even think of off the top of my head, but are going to help. But I think the guys that were here last year, before the majority, are all back. And so we know we've been there. Oh my, they've been there countless number of times, but we've actually got to win a World Series, and so we know what it takes, what it feels like, and I think we want to feel that again.
Who is the most exciting player in baseball?
Ooh, there's, I think it just depends on what aspect you want to see. I mean, obviously, you know, Tatis has a lot of things kind of going on that he does really, really well. So that's super exciting to watch. Obviously, Trout. There's just a lot of guys that are super exciting. So to me, it just depends on if you want to see homers, if you want to see bags, if you want to see defense. Then there's definitely a guy for all that.
Who has the most swag in baseball?
Swag. There are some guys with some swag. I'd have to go probably Lindor. I think Lindor has. You know, so a lot of swag.
Mookie, do you know your average exit velocity?
I'm going to have to say it's probably average, probably like 93.
Do you pay attention to that stuff?
No, I just know I don't hit the ball very hard.
Yeah.
That's all. I just know I don't hit it very hard at all.
Well, Mookie, can you tell the difference between 93 exit velocity and 103? Is that obvious, like the difference between 93 miles an hour from a pitcher and 103? Is it that obvious with exit velocity for a hitter?
Yeah, it's blatantly obvious. I think if you hit a 93 mile an hour ball in the gap, that ball's probably getting caught. 103, I think your chances of a double raise, I don't know how much, but a lot.
Sophia Minert is the field reporter for the Milwaukee Brewers for FS Wisconsin. And Sophia, welcome to the podcast as we go through the National League Central preview. We were talking with Derek Gould, who, of course, covers the Cardinals for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And I think on paper, a lot of people would agree that the Cardinals and Brewers might be the number one contenders to win the National League Central. And Derek told us, he goes, man, Brewers have a ton of pitching depth. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think this is as deep and as talented and as most importantly versatile as the Brewers feel that they've been in their pitching staff. That has always been a priority for David Stearns in the front office and something that I think as a manager, Craig Counsell is probably as good as anyone at utilizing across the game. So, you know, you look at their starting rotation and they feel that they have maybe two of the best anchors you could ask for in terms of young pitchers with Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. They do consider those to be the anchors of their rotation. Brandon Woodruff will be the opening day starter for a second straight season. And, you know, for these guys, I think what is most exciting, according to their pitching coach, Chris Hook, is that these are really, you know, young pitchers who have had success at the major league level. Brandon was an all-star in 19. Corbin Burns took a just tremendous step forward last year after a really challenging 2019, earned Cy Young votes, ended up finishing sixth in the National League. And they feel that these guys are still really in like the middle of their development. You know, Brandon Woodruff changed his usage a lot in terms of how he was using off speed to go along with that elite fastball. Same with Corbin. Corbin introduced a cutter, which ended up being one of his best pitches last year to go with a really elite fastball and slider. So they love what they have in that foundation. And then they've got, you know, a guy like Brett Anderson around them, Josh Lindblom, who I think benefited so much from even just a shortened 60-game season after a couple of really great years in Korea. And then their bullpen, I think, is where things get really interesting. And they refer to their group as being really funky because that is probably the best word to describe them. You know, again, you've got the two anchors with Devin Williams and Josh Hader. And then the rest of the group is just, it's all different angles. It's really balanced, lefty and righty. You've got power guys. You've got a sidearm guy like Eric Yardley, who was kind of their glue guy last year. A Brent Suter who can do everything for you. Same with Freddy Peralta. So I just really think they feel that they are deep and they're versatile and they can match up with pretty much any lineup across the series.
And we learned earlier this week that Josh Hader's role might evolve somewhat from how he's been used by Craig Counsell in the past.
Correct. Yeah. So in the past, we've seen Josh Hader as that multi-inning reliever, of course, in the closer role. And we saw him last year, you know, in 2020 in that more traditional closer role. And that was partially because of the construction of their bullpen and just the success that Devin Williams had. And I think Josh went into the offseason preparing for a similar sort of role. Craig Counsell has confirmed that here in spring training. And Josh feels like that's really where he's at his best. I think he feels that that's the best fit for him. And it's also just the best fit for the construction of their bullpen. And we saw Josh, you know, Josh is still a developing pitcher as well, just considering the success he's had as a two-time reliever of the year. We saw him go back to the slider more last year. It was a pitch he used more than 30% of the time, and he only gave up one hit off of that slider. So, you know, it's no secret what is coming at you when Josh Hader's on the mound. But this year he's introducing a changeup. It's something that he's had since his days in the minor leagues and as a starter. Just never really had the confidence in it at the major league level, but that's been a focus for him here in spring training. So it'll be interesting to see how much we see that in the regular season.
Christian Yelich really struggled in the 60-game season. You know, I've never seen him look so confused in a lot of his plate appearances. What have you seen in him this spring? And I know he's not someone who necessarily wants to look back too much, but how do you think he, what do you think he attributes 2020 to in terms of how he struggled?
I think it was kind of a snowball effect for Christian, I think. I mean, people forget that he was still coming off of that knee injury that he suffered in mid-September when he fractured his kneecap. So he didn't have a normal off season. He was still rehabbing from that. You know, showed up to spring training. He was quietly handling all of the contract extension stuff. He ended up signing that contract on March 6th. And that was the first spring training game that he played in. He played maybe one day after that, or that could have been the only game he played. And then, of course, everything happened on March 12th when the league was shut down because of COVID-19. So then, you know, we were in limbo, right? And so he prepared as best as he could. He was limited with what he could do in California. And then, you know, in summer camp, he just never got that feeling that he is used to having that led to the results that he had in 18 and 19. Now, Christian would never make an excuse. He certainly didn't last year. It was not for lack of effort either. There was nobody working harder than Christian to get it right, along with his hitting coach, Andy Haynes. So I just think when you see Christian at spring training, all it takes to see him is take one BP. And everyone that has seen him knows that he looks like himself right now. He looks like himself. The contact is there. The barrel is there. The power is there. He's getting good results in games. He feels like he's where he needs to be. And if anything, it kind of reminds me of 2018, his MVP season. There was this, you know, regression narrative around him. Now there's kind of this bounce back narrative around him, and he doesn't need any extra motivation. So I think internally with the Brewers, there's no concern. Christian will show up looking like himself in 21, excuse me.
So the focus of the book Moneyball was about taking advantage of market inefficiencies. And I thought about that during the course of the wintertime when the Brewers, who, you know, were one of the first teams to go with you know, traditional third baseman at second base, using the defensive shift to help the likes of Mike Moustakas and Travis Shaw. And this winter, they go out and get two great defenders, Colt Wong, who's probably the best second baseman in baseball, and Jackie Bradley Jr., one of the best outfielders in baseball.
Yeah, and you know, obviously we've talked a lot about that because those were two big storylines for the Brewers in what was otherwise a pretty quiet offseason. And you know, it'd be easy to say like, oh, that was the focus, was to upgrade defensively. And David Stearns and Craig Counsell said that's not necessarily the case. It's really just a function of being patient and being opportunistic. You know, Colton Wong didn't sign until the middle of February, and Jackie Bradley Jr. didn't sign until spring training had already started. It was, I think, the first week of March when he joined the team. So certainly defensive upgrades, you know, Craig Counsell talked about with his defense run prevention. And obviously a big part of that is pitching, but the other part of that is the defense behind them. And so they really value their defense up the middle. And when you look at what the Brewers have, I mean, the way even Omar Narvaez improved defensively behind the plate, then you've got Colton Wong now at second. They love what they have in Orlando Arcia, whether he's playing short or third. Luis Urias, we're going to likely see at shortstop a lot as well. We haven't seen him as much. And then you've got in center field, Lorenzo Cain. You cannot understate the importance of what it means to get Lorenzo Cain back in this clubhouse and with this team. And then, of course, Jackie Bradley Jr. So they feel like they're really loaded defensively. And, you know, again, that's just a huge part of their run prevention, especially considering their pitching staff, how many of their guys are, you know, ground ball pitchers, and they feel like this will help them so much defensively when you're able to move Preston Hira over to first base as well.
All right, Sophia, thank you for doing this. Thanks for getting up early.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets. For Thursday, Andrew Stout is up first at Thomas A.C. Stout, and he has a Shohei Ohtani hypothetical. He says, if Shohei Ohtani wins 10 games and hits 30 home runs, is he automatically the AL MVP?
And that's what Mike Trout suggested, potentially. 10-plus wins, 30-plus home runs. No, he would not automatically be the MVP. because it probably would depend somewhat on how the Angels do during the course of the year. But I tell you what, if the Angels are in contention to win the American League West and Ohtani puts up those type of numbers, that narrative is going to gain traction during the year.
Ooh, that would be juicy. Let's go to Ben Teschner at BA Teschner. He writes in, is the foreign substances enforcement thing for Major League Baseball really just a something they can hold over the players in the upcoming labor negotiations? Seems petty, but also on brand.
Well, they certainly are having, they're going to continue to have their disagreements with the Players Association. I think there has been, I know this, there's been growing discomfort with the decline in the numbers for hitters and the rising numbers of strikeouts and the feeling that, you know, in part because of the use of foreign substances, hitters or pitchers can get more spin on breaking balls and they're striking out more hitters. And so that's what's behind this. And I think, you know, is there going to be a change? I think the most substantive change is going to be whenever they actually get a baseball with a tacky service on it, because that's what they're struggling with. You know, they don't want to have the situation where that they do now, where you have all these pitchers walking out the mound and everyone can see they're using foreign substances.
All right. Last one for today. Molten Bosworth at GoJones71. He writes in, the Astros seem to benefit from the COVID shutdown last year because they didn't have to hear it from bitter fans across the country. What do you think happens this year with diminished crowds and over a year from the scandal breaking?
Yeah, they're going to hear it, you know, and I think it's always going to follow them. And it may not be as loud as it would have been in 2020 if there were fans in the stands, but they will hear it. And the best example that that I can relate to is Roberto Alomar. After he had a spitting incident and he was suspended the rest of his career, there would always be people, some people at least, yelling every time his name was announced in the ballpark.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Alden, Sarah, Sophia, and Taylor, and Mookie. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.